Thank you, Matthew. Happy Sabbath, everyone. Happy day 42. We have a very special weekend this weekend as Grant and Katarina are going to say their vows, and it's an exciting day full of excitement. We welcome everyone who's here for the wedding this weekend, and we can imagine that right now Grant and Katarina are full of excitement and expectancy and likely a little anxiety, but not Grant. He's too cool for that. But there's something in there, we can tell. So they will say their vows, which could include to love and to cherish each other. And we don't use that word a lot, cherish, but it's a very meaningful and impactful word as we're going to study today. And as we think about weddings and funerals, they are meaningful times, and our hearts and minds are open to a message that comes through in both of those. And it was interesting this year at the GCE when, after the acknowledgments and the honoring of the deceased in the last year, that Lynn Martin went back up and he took the podium afterward, and he said, "I'll go ahead and say what maybe everybody's thinking, and that is, what will they say about me when I die?" And there's this little element of that that we think about, because there's a message in each individual's story. And now this is the start of a story. And we might think back about the start of our story if we're married. We might think about the times and the feelings that we felt when we were up there. Or we may look forward to the time when we are up there. And we may hear those words and we may think about what they mean to us, and we may wonder if we've forgotten a little bit about how meaningful they are or should be. And as we say those words and as the officiant joins hands or lays hands on the couple and he prays for God to seal that marriage before the very throne of God, and he puts them before the very throne through that prayer. And then they become a long line, and tomorrow Grant and Katarina will become part of a long line of royal representatives of the God family. And they become part of a community and a long line of marital relationships, some very happy and successful. And we have the biblical story of many. You might think of some of the biblical marriages and relationships. We could start with Adam and Eve. What are some other of the marital relationships that we read about in the Bible that were special and had a special affection for each other? Abraham and Sarah. Yeah, and then we have Isaac. We have Jacob and Rachel. Isaac and Rebekah, Jacob and Rachel. Yeah, very good. Who else do we have? Say it loud. Mary and Joseph. Yeah, Joseph had a special affection for Mary because when things got really awkward and uncomfortable there, he wanted to do it the right way, and he wanted to very much respect and appreciate her. And we could keep going. And let's keep going and make it real personal, and let's look around in this room because now you are part of their community as well, and you have been. And there's a power and an accountability in community that we all have toward each other to think about how our relationships reflect and represent God. For those of us, and there are many in the room, and I recognize and understand, that aren't married or were married and miss that relationship. And yet how you speak of it and how you reflect it and how you appreciate it and how we remember it is still very powerful. And you can also still share things. In fact, I say things. Let's be more specific as we turn to Titus and define what that means. Titus 2 shares instruction really for all of us here. In Titus 2, it speaks to this element of community that we have. But as for you, speak the things which are proper for sound doctrine. So this is Timothy mentoring Titus, who's going to the island of Crete, and he's becoming the pastor there to multiple congregations on the island of Crete. And Paul is encouraging Timothy on how to encourage the congregations to serve each other. He says, this is proper doctrine, and that the older men be sober, be serious-minded, reverent, temperate, sound in the faith, in love, and in patience. So there's something wonderful about that. There's a mentorship and an example there. You know, I think we've talked about this before, that in the Northern Arizona congregation, in a group of approximately 40, there are 1,000 years of marriage represented there. If anyone needs marriage counseling, just go to Northern Arizona for the Sabbath, and afterward, they have snacks. Just sit down at any table and say, we're having a little problem. You'll get hundreds of years worth of perspective. And they won't be afraid to talk about it. And do you know what the number one characteristic exhibited from these long-time marriage couples is? What do you think it is? Patience. That's what I think I'm hearing. If this were a Wordle, patience is becoming the biggest word here. Patience. They're just over all the little issues. They're just patient. It's fun to hear him tell the same jokes he's probably been telling for 65 years, and she just smiles. Like, whatever. I hope you think they're funny. So here we see these characteristics in love and in patience, it says. So there's a great example to be had there. And then the older women, likewise, that they be reverent in behavior, not slanderers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things. And who can they especially affect? Who can they especially impact? That they admonish the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be chaste. But let's stop there for a moment. Love your husbands and love your children. Let's be honest. Husbands can do irritating things. We're okay with owning that. We're okay with that. And we may not even know how irritating it is. But the patience that comes in from the long-time couples, some of the women may say, honey, just wait it out. Give him 30 more years and all that will go away. Just love him. And just support him. And just encourage him as you can. And we're going to talk more about what that means. And so we see that this element of community is so important. And there's other attributes there you can read. But today we're going to level up on a concept that's woven throughout the Bible. We're going to level up on love, because love is important. Love is a verb. And perhaps we could see love a little bit like some of the commandments. We see when Jesus Christ came that he took two of the commandments and expounded upon them in the Sermon on the Mount. He said, you shouldn't kill. How are we doing there? Well, I have taken no lives with my own hands. I'm good. Are you? Have you ever been upset at somebody? Have you ever called anybody an idiot? Have you ever been slanderous of someone that you didn't like, or maybe they were blocking you from something, or maybe the list goes on where you're frustrated and you had words that were unkind about them? That's leveling up, number 6. Number 7 as well. How are we doing on that? Maybe you think you're good. You've never committed the physical act of infidelity. Have you ever thought about it? Have you ever looked at someone else and thought, then you're guilty there. So what about love? If love is something that we're encouraged to do, maybe the level up is cherish. Maybe it goes beyond just that. Can we have a little fun for a minute? This is love. Here's my bride of 30 years, a wonderful woman, actually, who was willing to go camping on our 30th anniversary at a nearby campground here on the beach. This is just not far from a place many of us have spent time, as it was our local feast site for a long time. This is here off of Encinitas, which is down to the coast from Escondido and Oceanside. So here we are enjoying a little time together. This looks like love, does it not? Now let's go to Cherish. This is Cherish. It takes it to a whole new level here. So the Bible encourages us and refers to Cherish as something we're encouraged to hold very dear. We might cherish wisdom. I wasn't sure that Cherish was in the Bible. I know it's in the vows, but I wasn't sure that it showed up in the Bible. It does. Cherish wisdom, it says in Proverbs. Cherish God himself. Our hope of salvation should be cherished. It's something that we aspire to, that we want to develop towards, to grow in. And we're encouraged to do that. How do we apply this concept to marriage? Much of what we will talk about today are derivatives from a recent book that I read entitled Cherish by Gary Thomas. Gary Thomas is an author I've come to very much appreciate. He's written several books on marriage, and one that we have referred to in other messages, Sacred Marriage, he also wrote. And Cherish is more fun, almost like the Sacred Marriage, he even acknowledges, was more about love, and then Cherish is more about the relationship. And his subtitle for his 2022 book, Cherish, is The One Word That Changes Everything About Marriage. Quote from the book, many couples survive marriage by gritting their teeth and holding on, or they find themselves just going through the motions in their relationship. But cherishing your spouse can change this pattern. Cherishing can breathe light, hope, and a new life into a marriage, even one marred by neglect and disrespect. If you find yourself going through the motions in your marriage, Thomas will walk you and your spouse through a real and practical ways, through real and practical ways to reverse the pattern. And then as we look at some of the bullet points of the book, erase contempt and honor your spouse. Stop comparing and focus on the unique positive traits in your spouse. Let go of hurts and forgive your spouse. Go beyond serving and showcase your spouse. Don't stop trying. He has a chapter entitled Cherish, Cherish. Don't stop trying. The more you cherish your spouse, the more you will cherish your spouse. The easier it will be. So some of these points are derivatives from the book, and some are going to the scripture very directly, and some are added anecdotal stories. One of his points, and this is point one of today's message, your husband or wife is the only man or the woman in the world. Your husband or wife is the only man or woman in the world. To you, that should be true. This is a true or false test. How are we doing? It should be true. You can pray for that to be true. You can pray for her to be your Eve, or for him to be your Adam. And Gary Thomas makes the point. Without Adam and Eve, there was no one with darker or more curly hair, or bigger, stronger, taller, smarter, whatever it is that you may want to think about. There was none of that. It was just those two. That was everything. And he was pretty pleased with that. He was very pleased with that. He had looked at all the other animal kingdom and said, there's nothing here for me, God. And then God created her and he says, oh, that is wonderful. Thank you. And so they had that relationship. And so you can ask this as well. You can deliberately curate these attributes into your relationship. And I'll say even relationships, because we can pray for all relationships to be better. This can apply to other relationships, yet there is no relationship like marriage that highlights these attributes, highlights the frustrations, highlights the character development that can occur in a relationship. There's nothing like marriage for that. And so that's why we're primarily talking about marriage, but it can apply to other close relationships in our life as well. Point number two, erase contempt and honor your spouse. Gary Thomas does talk a lot about contempt. And he didn't say this, but I think it's implied in what he did say. And that is that cherish and contempt are like two ends of a spectrum. And that you're either operating on one end or the other, and maybe even in different areas at different parts of life, but ultimately one will crowd out the other. If you allow certain thoughts and certain feelings to grow and take root, then they will grow and take root. And they will ultimately, one will crowd out the other. There's a Cherokee legend. And the legend is that each of us inside of us have two wolves. And one is good and one is evil. And they are in there and they're fighting each other. Perhaps we could look at Romans 7 in this light as well and recognize that there's cognitive dissonance that we might experience, where we may hold these two equally valuable ideas to each other and to us that are in opposition with each other, and they fight. And as I heard the tale, as the Cherokee chief was telling his grandsons this story, one of the grandsons says, "Grandpa, which one wins?" And he says, "The one you feed." So do we have a choice in what we think about with regard to our spouse and our core relationships? We do. You want to see cherish amongst wolves? Isn't that cute? So they can develop the attitude too. They don't have to be in opposition with each other. So do you focus on attributes you like, love, and appreciate, and respect, and honor in your spouse? Or those that annoy, and frustrate, and aggravate, and that you dislike, and that you wish you could change? And if only you could change this thing about them, then things would be better. If only they weren't so, or if they were more so, or the list goes on. Is that what you focus on? You have a choice. Contempt is a killer. Dale Carnegie said, "Any fool can condemn, complain, or criticize. And most fools do." We should recognize that that is not the types of thoughts that we should be having. Let's turn to 2 Corinthians 10:5. We have a choice and we're encouraged to make it. 2 Corinthians 10, we'll start in 4. Well, let's start in 3. We've read a lot about this because this is parallel in some ways to Ephesians. "For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh." These are spiritual battles. Let's understand that we face and fight. "For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty in God for pulling down strongholds, So if this is a spiritual battle, it occurs in our minds, casting down arguments and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, bring every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. Bring every thought into captivity. Catch yourself. Say, that's a rogue thought. That is an enemy invasion in my mind. Satan and his knucklehead demons, get out of my head. Pray about it. When you know it's happening, and it can happen, and it does happen, and it can happen quick, and suddenly there it is, and there is this influence, and it's in your head, and you have to recognize that. You can recognize it. If you do recognize it, and you pray, and you replace it, you can get rid of it. You can go to battle against these negative thoughts. It says here, let's read the verbs. Cast them down. Get them out. Remember the spiritual battle that we're in. Remember the spiritual armor that we need. Recognize that it's a fight. It won't be easy. Don't feed it. Because if you feed it, then that wolf growls, and then what happens? Yeah. Now you're driving in the car, fighting, and arguing, and bickering, and you're feeding the wolf. Why? What about saying, I don't know what just happened. As we were driving along here, the mile marker hasn't even changed, but there's something different in the car. How about if we just pray about it together? And then you say, Heavenly Father, great God, please help everything to work out well. And then suddenly she's not worried about what you were doing before. Let's look at this. We have the anatomy of sin in James. Let's look at the anatomy of contempt. Disappointment. We expected something different, and now we're disappointed. Is disappointment sin? Not necessarily. We all have expectations, and we may get disappointed about something. Okay, what do we do with that? Do we focus on it? Do we feed it? Because if we do, then it can lead to frustration. Feed frustration, and it will lead to bitterness. Feed bitterness, it will lead to contempt. The single biggest threat, this is back to Gary Thomas, he says the single biggest threat to marriage is contempt. Point number three, let go of hurts and forgive your spouse. Let go of hurts and forgive your spouse. We've read Hebrews 12 a few times lately about lay aside every weight and run with endurance the race that's set before you. But if you want to carry hurts around, load up your pack. You're only hurting yourself. You're only making your own life harder. But if you want to load up your pack and carry all your hurts and frustrations and not forgive around, that's your choice. The Bible suggests that you look at it a little different. Why don't you just let them go? Let's turn to Ephesians 4, verse 32. Be kind to one another. And this is, by the way, after verse 31, where it's saying, let all bitterness and wrath and anger and evil speaking be put away from you. Get rid of those things. Let go. Just let it go. And then be kind to one another. Tender-hearted. Forgiving one another. Cherishing one another. Even as God in Christ forgave you. Now that levels it up, doesn't it? That takes it to a whole new level. What if Christ only forgave us the way we forgive others? Well, as a matter of fact, that is how it works. He did say that. He did say that, be careful about being judgmental, because with what measure you use, it will be measured back to you. He did say that we'll be forgiven as we forgive others. It's part of the model prayer. to be forgiving. How do you look at your spouse? Are they on the opposite end of the tug of war? Is it a battle? Are you across from each other? Or are you walking side by side? Are you facing life and its challenges and its difficulties side by side? Or somehow have you been pitted face to face? And are you looking at each other? Point four, go beyond serving and showcase your spouse. One from Gary Thomas, one of his analogies is the ballet analogy. He says ballet is really about the woman, that she's the beautiful dancer. And the ballet is about showcasing the beauty of the ballerina. Now, there are often men in ballet, and what they can do is help showcase her. They can toss her higher and allow her to spin in a different way and lift and showcase and present the beauty of the woman. And then when it's time for the applause, the man backs away from the spotlight and it goes to the ballerina. The officiant in a wedding stands front and center. Yet I have been encouraged for past and upcoming weddings to disappear after the final word of the ceremony is done, so that the pictures and the kiss and all of that are of the bride and groom. You may now kiss the bride. And you may now get out of the way. So remember that, Mr. Fogelson. That's what we're supposed to do. Just make it look smooth. So we showcase that beauty. Now, using that dance analogy, this may be helpful for you in your marriage. Is it like a dance? Grant and Katarina, I think you started this whole relationship as dance partners. And they have moves. Do not enter into a contest with them tomorrow. So, yet they recognize, too, that there may be moves that are difficult for one or the other. And using the ballerina and ballet perspective, or Grant and Katarina as dancing partners, they may know that this particular move is difficult for some reason. For the other, this is where they stumble. And we can recognize that we all are going to stumble in some ways and sometimes. James recognizes this. And let's read some instruction here in James. James 3. James 3 and verse 2. For we all stumble in many things. If anyone does not stumble in word, he is a perfect man. So, we all stumble in many ways, James acknowledges. We all blow it from time to time. And it may be true that our spouse stumbles in certain ways. It may be, you name it. I won't even throw out examples out there. But it may be that Carrie knows that this one thing will trigger me. And it may not be something she does. It may be something someone else does, but I get triggered at that moment. And so she may know that that's about to happen and put her arm on my arm. Say, be careful. Or she may recognize, here's one. When fasting, blood sugar drops to pretty much record lows, and it can create a condition known as hangry. So if I happen to be fasting, we actually know that it's best to not fast at the same time together. That seems like a good idea, but it often isn't, because then you have two hangry people that are snippy, chippy, you might say. So it's just better that one is not and the other one has their time and then the other one has their time, and it works out better that way. So there's an example. But we all stumble in many ways, and yet it's this little weapon right here that gets us in more trouble than anything, doesn't it? That can hurt more than anything the other person. Right here. That's what James is saying. We all stumble in many things. If anyone doesn't stumble in word, he's a perfect person, able to bridle the whole body. If you have self-control in this region, you're doing great. You could probably handle almost everything else. So this is something we should keep working on. Indeed, we put bits in horses' mouths so that they may obey us. Powerful animals can be turned at a delicate little touch in the mouth. And if we can just handle that, we exercise tremendous self-control. Let's turn back to Ephesians again, Ephesians 5. Going beyond serving and showcasing your spouse is the point we're on. Let's read this section in that light. Wives, submit to your husbands as to the Lord. This is a level up. Cherish your husbands as to the Lord. This is a spiritual issue. And it says, for the husband is head of the wife, as also is Christ the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body. So we see this spiritual aspect here. Therefore, just as the church is subject to Christ, so wives should be to their husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church. And I think we could say cherished the church. He gave himself fully for her. His life, there was nothing he held back. Not in any way, he gave it all. That makes those preceding verses a little more palatable, doesn't it? When a man is willing to do that, it's a whole lot easier for the ladies to say, I can love and respect and cherish and submit to a man like that. That he might, verse 26, sanctify, set her apart, and cleanse her with the washing of the water by the word. Make her garments white and beautiful as a bride is in all her glory on her wedding day. The most beautiful version of herself ever on that wedding day. And then in verse 27, and this is talking about Christ, that he might present her to himself, a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, so that she should be holy and without blemish. So husbands ought to love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. This is how much we should love the other. No one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as the Lord does the church. So this is the job for the husband and the wife. Take that job. Tomorrow it will become your job, and take it on. It won't be the job of the in-laws anymore. It won't be the job of anyone else. Leave and cleave. That's a part. Oh, here comes the in-law saying, wait a minute. He just went from preaching to meddling. And so I did. And intentionally so. In-laws, get out of the way. You're extended family now. Watch a new family grow. And it's your job to stay out of the way. This is part of counseling that has become a significant part of counseling. I have seen marriages destroyed because of this element, because the parents didn't let them leave and cleave and stayed involved and didn't let them sort out their challenges and didn't let them become a new family and still held on to the relationships and the roles that they wanted to continue to maintain. And dads love their daughters. And mothers love their sons, dads love their sons and their daughters, and yet there is a new family created at IDU, and we have to let it go. We have to let them become the new family. And then we have to take on our role. We have to recognize that there are some things it's okay to call mom about. That's good. There are other things that we also, as a couple, need to sort out. And we need to work it out. And that transition can be difficult. But it's important. So there's a leave and cleave element. And this is, by the way, right what we're about to read in verse 31. For this reason, we should enter into this relationship because it's going to test us and perfect us and challenge us like no other relationship will. And that's why God ordained it, and it's so important to him. Verse 31, a quote from another scripture, "For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh." They become one, a new family unit, a new unit. Now, we try to wrap our minds around this, and Paul says, this is a great mystery. But I want you to understand it. It's this way with husband and wife, and it's this way concerning Christ and the church. So, let every one of you, in particular, love his own wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. These are facets of cherishing. And I'm using this term facet, and so I'd like to introduce another analogy here, an object lesson that is particularly meaningful to me and helps me to understand this. The Institute of America, or GIA, Gemological Institute, recognized the need for standards to assess, verify, and grade gems. This is probably something you've learned about recently, Grant. The four C's. Still break out in a cold sweat, don't you? What are the four C's, Grant? Did you forget carrots, Grant? Yeah, it's color, cut, clarity, and carrots. To understand diamond clarity, we must first understand how diamonds are created. So all of these four C's are aspects of the diamond, and we must understand how they're created. Natural diamonds are exposed to tremendous heat and pressure. That's how they're formed. Without that process, you don't get this most valuable and the valuable gem and the hardest of all substances known to man. It's number 10 on the Mohs scale. That's the hardest element, is a diamond. It takes heat and pressure to get there, to create something that can then be made into something very beautiful. But this process can result in a variety of internal characteristics called inclusions and external characteristics called blemishes. They're part of the process. To have inclusions and blemishes are part of the process. Evaluating diamond clarity and quality involves determining the number, size, relief, nature, and position of these characteristics, as well as how they affect the overall appearance of the stone. This is the process that we go through when dating. We assess the characteristics and the inclusions and the blemishes and all the elements of the person, and ideally we take a little time and we go through that process, and then we make the selection, just as the groom and the bride do when they select the stone. That's the one. And it has some grading, and those gradings can be internally flawless, or VVS1 or VVS2, and that's very, very slightly included. So there may be a little blemish on there, but it's very difficult to see, or very slightly included, or slightly included, which are noticeable under 10 times the magnification. Or included, where they're fairly obvious. And so there's still the selection process that's been made, and then that becomes your stone, and it has its beauty, and it has its flaws. And you know what they are, and you can get a report from the GIA that details them accurately. This is the stone, this is the color, this is the cut, this is the carats, the size, and this is where the inclusions are. And they describe it in great detail. It's the jeweler's objective as a craftsman or craftsperson to determine how to present the beauty of the stone. And so now, no surprise. We have computer modeling that can take a stone and understand where the blemishes and inclusions are and provide suggestions on how to maximize the beauty. From the jeweler's perspective, at one point it was all done by eye. They would look at it, mark it, polish it or cut it, and then look at it again and continue to keep working at it and cut different facets in it so that it would reflect the light and that the maximum beauty could be extracted from the stone. It's a very delicate and time-consuming process. Do you know what the person is referred to that looks at the stone, has the magnifying glasses on, looks at the stone and puts it to the polishing wheel, holds it to the light and continues to polish it? Do you know what they're called? A brilliantier. What a title. A brilliantier. It is this craftsmanship and skill that is the main source of defining the beauty of the diamond. This is true even today. With all the computer modeling and everything that we have, it's still the person that touches it, and it's a craft that's passed on through many generations. Side note, interestingly, does anybody know the ethnicity of those who largely control the diamond industry?
Jews.
And one reason is it's multi-generational. This may or may not be the reason, but certainly since the Holocaust, that's one way they would store wealth. They would sew diamonds into their clothes, and they could carry wealth with them in inconspicuous ways. And then there's Antwerp, Belgium, where many of them congregated, and there's a multi-billion-dollar gem industry. And while most of that country does not have a lot of Jews, there is quite a concentration there. Side note. So this is passed on through many generations. A brilliantier is, as are good marriages. And we are church family. And so we, as church family, regardless of our family history, our DNA history, our church family, and we can pass on that happiness and that joy and that encouragement as Titus was encouraged to do from Paul. Point number five, minimize faults and maximize the beauty. As the brilliantier strives to do, minimize faults and maximize the beauty. Do you know how to tell a manufactured or artificial or lab-made diamond from the authentic? Do you know how jewelers tell? The lab-made don't have flaws. They don't have flaws. Isn't that interesting? If one doesn't have flaws, they are artificial. We might think about that in many ways as well and see how that shows up in our own lives, in our own minds. Maybe we watch a movie and think, oh, what a perfect guy. He's so witty and handsome and cute and delightful. And everything he says. But we don't really know that real person. Or we may look at an image and say, wow, there's the depiction of beauty. But then even the person that the picture is of says, I don't look like that. That has been completely remanufactured. It doesn't show any of the real flaws. They've been airbrushed or somehow manipulated away. Or completely fabricated. The real has flaws. And that is part of the process. That's how we're made. And we have flaws too. So, did Jesus Christ accept us because we got perfect enough? He says, okay, you have now qualified in that way. No, that's not how it works. Let's look at Romans 5. Romans 5, verse 6. Oh, I can't help myself. I always do this, but I'm going to do it here because it's so applicable. Romans 5, verse 3. Not only that, but we glory in tribulations, knowing that tribulation produces perseverance, and perseverance character, and character hope. What's going on when that happens? What is the challenge that we face? Why would we glory in tribulation? Because it's the heat and pressure that we go through that helps perfect us. Now, it doesn't necessarily eradicate all of our flaws, but it perfects us into something that God can use and illuminate the beauty of. Now we get to verse 6. When we were still without strength, in due time, Christ died for the ungodly. For scarcely for a righteous person would one die, yet perhaps for a good man someone would dare to die. Verse 8, but God demonstrates his own love toward us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Does your spouse need to qualify for your love? Do they need to earn it? Do you need to punish them if they're not good enough for it? That's not the way Christ treats you. Is that how you want to be treated? By our Creator and His Son? Philippians gives us some other encouragement. I'm sure the answer is no. No, we want to become Christ-like. We want to be like Christ. We want to become like Him. We're a disciple of Him. We may not be there. We may be imperfect. We may have flaws. We may have blemishes. But we want to be as much like Him as we can. We want to cut away all that doesn't look like Him. We want to allow the master craftsman to work in our lives to change us, to be a brilliantier, so that we get rid of all the things that don't reflect His light and more perfectly and beautifully reflect that light. And the beautiful thing is marriage puts us to the wheel. And it helps us go through that process. And it's a beautiful process when we understand this. And as we think about becoming more like Christ and cherishing the other, let's read these elements, these attributes, these facets in Philippians 2. Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind let us esteem others better than himself, looking out not only for his own interests, but also the interests of others. Verse 5, let this mind be in you, which was in Christ Jesus, who being in the form of God, did not consider it to be robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation. And he humbled himself to the point of death in the cross. So, that's how much God loves us. Robin Weber, our regional pastor, when he was out here recently for the pastoral meeting, says, it has been a pleasure to not only spend time with you men, but also with your wives, and get to know the one whom God put in your life to help perfect you to do the job that you've been called to do. And to see the teams and to see the partnerships and to see the way that you work together. He appreciated that. Seek first to understand and then be understood, is what Stephen Covey had to say. As we think about the other person, and we value others higher than ourselves. What if we tried to view life circumstances through the other's lens? What if we cherish our spouse or those in our lives enough to say, what they're doing, what they're thinking makes sense to them, and I love them. How can I better understand what they're doing and thinking and why? How can I learn to see it through that perspective and through that lens? Matthew 7:1 says, be careful in this area and judge not, that you be not judged, for with what measure you use, it will be measured back to you. And Matthew 5, preceding that in the Sermon on the Mount, talks about the ways that people impose upon each other. Someone asks you to walk 1 mile with them, walk with them too. If they slap you on one cheek, show them the other cheek. And that if you can handle these slights, if you can handle these impositions, if you can handle those challenges, if you can handle the relational issues as they present themselves in your life, then we get to Matthew 5:48, which would otherwise be kind of confusing. But then in Matthew 5:48, it says, therefore, If you're able to handle all of this, then you would be perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect. So that's what we're doing when we feel the pain of relational issues. We understand more and better how God feels about us. Maybe we feel like we're not getting the love from the other person. Maybe they're not interested in what we feel. Maybe they've got their own things going on. We might ask ourselves, do I ever exhibit that characteristic to God who's given his son for me? Do I ever neglect that relationship? Maybe I should pour more effort into that and my relationship with the ones most important to me, and maybe all will improve. Point number six. Before I give you point number six, I'm going to tell you this is personal because this was said to me, and I don't remember who said it. So we'll attribute it to anonymous. But this is what they said to a younger Scott. Point number six, no relationship you will ever be in will be perfect because you are in it. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. It takes an open heart and an open mind to hear these words. It takes an element of meekness. So open your hearts and minds. You can unlock it, or you can ask God to open them, and he will. He'll help you. You can pray to develop that attitude of cherish. You can see how it will change your heart. Be deliberate with regard to learning to cherish and treasuring our most important relationship, as we read about in Ephesians 5. Be intentional. Philippians 2:12, just beyond where we stopped reading. As we read those words about letting the mind of Christ be in us, Philippians 2:12 says, work out your salvation with fear and trembling. That's how serious we should take these words of encouragement. Matthew 4:4 says, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. Matthew 4:4. And we know that 2 Timothy 3:16 says, all scripture is inspired by God. So it's these scriptures that we should be reading. But not just to read them, and not just on Saturday. They show up on Tuesday. Or they don't. Whether or not we are incorporating these concepts into our life, whether or not we're praying to God to ask him to change us and develop us and to cut those facets into us that reflect his beauty, shows up on Tuesday. Why do I say Tuesday? I mean Tuesday or Wednesday, every day that ends in Y. That's when we're tested. That's how we're tested, is through the relationship. And 1 Corinthians 13 says, you may be the big man on campus. You may be super successful. You may be the most talented woman in your entire circle. You may be the most beautiful, the most capable, the best of whatever it is you do. 1 Corinthians 13 talks a lot about love. Though I speak with the tongues of men and angels but have not love, I've become a noisemaker. Though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge. This is Paul speaking, so these would be things that would be important to him. Though I'm the greatest orator of all time, though I have all the wisdom and mystery, and he's speaking this to a Greek audience, which is something they would value, though I have faith enough that I could move a mountain. I believe that mountain should be over there, and I just made it happen. But if I don't have love, I am nothing. Though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, though I write big checks and have my names on the walls of universities and hospitals, and the charities that feed the hungry and the poor, I've written big checks. My name's on the wall. I've done good things, and you should know that. Paul says, no. None of that matters if you don't have love. And then here are the facets of love, the brilliance and the beauty. Love suffers long and isn't kind. It doesn't envy. It doesn't parade itself. It's not puffed up. It doesn't behave rudely. It doesn't seek its own. It's not provoked. It doesn't even think evil. It doesn't rejoice in sin, but it rejoices in the truth. And this is what, that's what we get rid of certain things and we refill it with this. We bear all things. We believe all things. We hope all things. We endure all things. This is a maturation process. We'll get to that here in a minute. There's two other lists that you should look at. Philippians 4, 8. And Colossians 3. I'm going to spin through these. And I'll go fast, but you have the scriptures so you can go back to them and look at them later. And this is worthy of reflection. In fact, it may be good to take a day on each one of these elements as you think about your relationship. So now you've got study material for the next couple of weeks. Philippians 4, verse 8 says, don't be anxious about things. We get anxious. We have anxieties. We're human. And it's been said that worry has to do with our memories of the past, and anxiety has to do with our imagination of the future. And so Paul says, let's put that aside, and let's think about these things. What is true? What is true about the one you cherish? Are you sure they were intentionally trying to make you mad? Or maybe there's another explanation. We can judge each other by intent rather than outcome. It says, love the other as yourself. We read that in Ephesians 4. We might, in our piety, say, well, I don't really love myself that much. I have a rather humble view of myself. Do you remember what Mr. Tuck said? That he was the humblest man ever? He said he was so humble that he got a medal for his humility, and then he wore it and they took it away. So we may think we're the most humble person in the world, but do we judge others by intent? Because we judge ourselves, the one we really love the most, let's be honest, by our intent. I didn't mean to offend you. I didn't mean to upset you. I didn't intend for you to take it that way. Well, if we can judge ourselves that way, maybe loving another as ourselves is to think about their intent instead of just the outcome. So what is true? You can focus on what things are true. What is honorable? What's worthy of honor in your spouse? What makes you thrilled to be married to the other? Not their flaws and inclusions. You can become myopic on that. Once you know it's there in a ring or a stone, you may just always let your eye go right to what's wrong. And you know, some of us have that ability to do that. Contractors may walk in here and take a look around and say, well, there was a water leak there at one point, and looks like you may have a little mold issue over there, and a current leak, and just can quickly see things that others may not look at. Others may see character traits or personality flaws quickly. Whatever it is, you may have that. But is that what you want to focus on? What about looking at the beauty and the overall elements? What is honorable? What is right? This is the list in Philippians 4. What is in alignment with God? Maybe they have beautiful character. I heard a man, this is the owner of a very large construction company. This man had all the money he could ever spend and generations after him could ever spend. And he said, I just wish I had someone to share it with that was just kind. He'd had several wives, and he just wanted someone that was kind. And that's all he would have asked for. That's all he did ask for. So how about focusing on that? If you have someone that's kind, Carrie's very kind. I love her kindness. And I think about that. I think about that wish that that man had from time to time. Let's keep going. Pure. Purity is a precious commodity. Lovely. She's the only one. He's the only one. What is lovely about him? Mr. Fogelson gave a message, and you might still break out into a little sweat as you hear this on Song of Solomon not long ago. He gave a message on Song of Solomon, and he went there. And I suggest that you go there. It's in the Bible, and it's there for a reason. And when you think about marital love, read it. It talks about how special it is. And now you too can read it. Not tonight. Tomorrow night. And you can read about the beauty of the physical elements and what they cherished about each other. What is lovely? What is admirable? That's the next one. Admirable. Admirable. Admirable about my spouse. Look at it this way. What attributes would you want your kids to take from your spouse or from you as a couple? What is excellent? What is excellent and worthy to be cherished? And finally, worthy of praise. One way you may think about what is worthy of praise is, what do others see in your spouse? What is it that they find? So that's the list in Philippians. We go to Colossians. Colossians 3 is one of my favorite passages because it represents a list, and to me, it's like those facets on the jewel. That if we could develop these elements, we would reflect God himself. And it even says this as we look into Colossians 3. And we could read the whole thing. It says, if you were raised with Christ, seek the things above where Christ is. You want to look like him. You want to reflect him. Set your mind there, not on things of the earth. And put to death, I'm skimming in verse 5, it says, put to death your members which are on the earth. These are things that should get carved off and polished away, these different attributes. And the result of those is going to be the wrath of God. But verse 8, but now you yourselves are to put off these things. And again, it goes through another list that does show up in relationships. Anger, wrath, malice, filthy language out of your mouth. Don't lie to each other. You put off the old person and those deeds and those thoughts. Put on the new man who's renewed in knowledge according to the image of him who created him. According to the brilliantier who's working in our lives to help us to reflect him in his light. Therefore, verse 12, as the elect, as the chosen of God, as the stones that have been selected for him to polish and for him to make beautiful, and to reflect his light, that's you. You've been chosen in this way. As the elect of God, holy, set apart. I'll take that one. The rest of these could go. I'll take this one and work with this one and make it beautiful. And there's its inclusions and its blemishes, and I'll take those and make it beautiful. That's what God does with us, and this is what we should do for each other. And in order to do that, we have to put on these elements. Put on tender mercies, kindness, humility, meekness. Meekness is a trust in this process. It's a willingness to let go. Teachability. It's a key element there, as is humility. Humility is that foot-washing attitude that we read about as we prepare for Passover and in the Passover service. We all wash each other's feet, and we talk about what Christ said. If I, your Lord and Master, have washed your feet, so you ought to go and wash each other's. How many in the foot washing ceremony have ever washed their spouse's feet? Yeah, a few hands because of COVID, right? We were there, and when we presented COVID, the Passover service, even over COVID, we did that one time. But hopefully that's not the only time ever. Hopefully it's every day and maybe multiple times a day that we're willing to figuratively, spiritually, emotionally wash our spouse's feet. Just think about that. If you're willing to take a knee in a room like this or somewhere around, as you take on that symbolism, if you're willing to do it once a year, it's symbolic of what we should be doing daily in those core relationships for each other. Bearing with one another, which means subordinating the self to the other. Forgiving one another, let it go. Even as Christ forgave you, so you must also do, it says again in Colossians. Love is the bond of perfection, and when we do this, the peace of God rules in our hearts to which we were called, and we can be thankful. There are many who would say, I could take a few inclusions and a few blemishes. I would just like to be married again. I would just like to have that relationship either again or once. And it's not easy to find. So we can be thankful for what we have, those who are married, and we can be going through the process, those who aren't, as well, and recognize that God Himself has called us to be the bride of Christ. And that regardless of what our status is right now, that's what we're growing towards. And that brings us to the final point, point seven. Maturation is a process. It's a process of maturity. You can't jump steps in maturity with the standard maturity curve that we all know well. It's crawl, walk, run. Some of us stop there. Some go on. Run farther. Run faster. Colin just ran a marathon last weekend. So he ran far. And he ran faster than he thought he would. He had a goal time and he beat his goal time. And so he may say, I never want to run again. Or he may say, oh, I want to do that again and I want to do it faster. So there's a maturity there as it goes. We stopped in 1 Corinthians 13. We stopped reading, but let's read verses 11 and 12, just beyond where we paused. Speaking of maturation, it says, when I was a child, I spoke as a child. I understood as a child. I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. When we marry, we may be relational children. We're young, we're immature. We may stay that way for 40 years of marriage. Maybe it's not until we retire that we suddenly aren't so busy with careers and kids and all the other things that suddenly we're looking at each other or we're empty nesters or whatever that next phase is when we realize, I could do some growing up here. This is a lifelong journey. It never ends. But it's saying here, go beyond those early levels of maturity. Grow beyond them. Grow beyond selfish indulgences in word and thoughts and actions. Grow beyond destructive thought patterns. Grow up. Peter, one of our favorites perhaps, one of my favorites, very colorful disciple, wrote a letter later in life that he wanted, of words that he wanted to share with you. He said, as long as I'm alive, I'm going to share these things with you because I want you to know them and I want you to know them long after I'm gone. So he says in verse 5 of 2 Peter 1, but for this reason, give all diligence, be really diligent, work hard to add to your faith virtue, to virtue, knowledge. To knowledge, self-control. These are getting harder. This is something that he felt personally. These are character traits and attributes that he had to work at. To self-control, perseverance. Don't just go through bouts of self-control, but continue to work at it and develop it and stick with it. To perseverance, godliness, and to godliness, brotherly kindness, and to brotherly kindness, love. And then he keeps going. He says, if you do this, you won't be barren or unfruitful in the knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ. You'll bear fruit. It's hard work. as is polishing a diamond. The diamond is the hardest substance known to man. It's hard to get rid of those burrs and those elements that shouldn't be there. It's hard work. Are we willing to allow what shouldn't be there to go away so the brilliantier can make what he wants of us? Are we willing to learn to let that go and develop these characteristics? Are we willing to cherish each other and to develop those character traits? Let's rejoice with the bride and groom this weekend. Let's celebrate their commitment to this journey. Do you still want to do this? Let's support them. Let's be an example to them. Let's exemplify Titus 2. Let's be the multiple generations for them. Let's be their community. Let's understand what God is doing through our relationships with each other as he shapes our character to be like him. Let's not just love, let's cherish.